You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to my guest, Toni Will. And we talk about a time in her life when she intentionally chose to change some of her coping skills. She says that she was numbing and she knew it, so she figured out a better way to stop numbing. I'm being a little bit vague here just so that I don't give everything away before you get to hear this wonderful conversation. One of the things that I think you will find helpful and supportive about this conversation is that Toni is open and specific about how she made this happen for herself. She shares some of the books she read, the coaching programs she joined, the conversations she had with important people in her life, and some of the ways she got through some pretty tough spots. We do talk about the challenges that she's faced along the way in the social and the community impact of her choices. And we also talk about what life is like now for her, which is about 5 years since she made this change. So a little bit of a note, technical note, we did have a little bit of a jumpy, glitchy connection during one part of this recording. If I happen to do an exceptional job editing this, you're not even going to notice, but I record this introduction right after I record the interview before I edit it. So in the event that there's a slight jump at some point in the conversation, it's me. I did that. And that's just how it goes. I think that you are really going to like this conversation. So let's get to it. Welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. Toni Will, are you ready for a fun chat today?
Oh my gosh, I am so excited. Thank you, Amy, for having me.
Oh, yay. I start all of my conversations asking my guests, what part of the world do you call home?
Kalamazoo, Michigan, born and raised, and I've never left. And at this point, I probably won't.
Born and raised. All right. That was not what I was expecting. Excellent. I knew where you were living before we started, but I wasn't expecting born and raised. I love it. One more warm-up question before we get to the topic of the day, which is not how much fun Kalamazoo is to say. What is one way that you incorporate beauty and or art into your day-to-day life?
I don't know if this is a common answer or not, but I live on a private lake. And right now in Michigan, it is beautiful. And we get the four seasons. So when I'm working out, I'm by the sliders and I'm looking out. It literally looks like a Norman Rockwell painting. It's got the red barn, a white picket fence, snow, pine trees. It's gorgeous. And I know we're going to talk about sobriety and all that, but because I choose to live a drug-free life, I have a moment every day to look at the beauty that I'm surrounded by. And it's really inspirational.
I love it. And I think that even if we were talking about something else, that would be a good mindful moment in most people's day. All right. So you beat me to the punch. We are going to talk about today a time when you chose to stop numbing. Those were the words that you used, parts of your life. And I did not know whether or not this was the only change or the primary change, but you chose to stop drinking and alcohol and maybe other things too. Are you ready to talk with me about that today?
I am, and I'm excited. I love talking. It's one of my favorite topics.
I love that. I do. All right. So where I want to start with that is getting an idea of what life was like for you before you made this change. First question is, how long ago was this that you actually made this change in your life?
So I'm going to answer it two ways.
Sure.
So this phase of my alcohol-free sobriety has been just over 5 years. But this wasn't the first time I tried. Like most people who are uncomfortable with their relationship with alcohol or any substances for that matter, I would say I started, that inner voice was like a whisper in my mid-30s. Like early, like 32, 33, 34, and it got louder and louder and louder. So by the time I was 37, I stopped drinking through AA for 15 months. I labeled myself an alcoholic. I really dove into it and I was successful for about 15 months until I started to have other thoughts that I believed. And I went back out for three more years and just really tried to as I like to say, have it all. And
Yeah.
my journey was one where my definition of have it all included alcohol at that stage. So I was 42 years old when I hung up my wine glass for good.
That's I love I'm smiling. I was many years ago, I was at a holiday party and somebody came to the party and they had a necklace, like a lanyard that held on to their wine glass that they had brought for the party. And so when you said hang up the wine glass, that was the visual that came into my mind. And of course, you can put anything into a goblet like that. So, you can use it for Sprite if you want to, but we do still call it that. It was a, so you hung up your wine glass. All right. So what was life like 5 years ago in terms of like work and family and home life? Not in terms of necessarily relationship to alcohol, but just to give us a feeling of what your day-to-day life was like.
Yeah, so that was October of 2020. So anytime
Okay.
anyone hears the year 2020, what do you automatically think of?
Lockdown.
COVID, right?
Yeah.
And so I decided we were in the early days of COVID, and I work in professional sports. And so, and I'm in hockey, which is an indoor winter sport, which means gathering thousands of people indoors was not in trend at
No.
that time. So I was still working full time from home, and still managing my staff, and we were working on other things in order because we just didn't know where we were. Are we going to open again in the fall? We didn't know at that time. So I had this beautiful opportunity back then, and I asked myself, I don't like my relationship with alcohol. I don't know what label I want to give myself, if any, but I could either really just kind of wallow in this and just drink my face off because we were all in the house forever. Or I could do the uncomfortable thing, which is start to work on myself and use this time more productively. So I chose the latter. And I also chose to tell on myself, so to speak. After I got a solid 80 days in, I decided that I was going to go public on social media. And being anonymous did not work for me. The
Yeah.
AA framework wasn't something. It's I actually am a big fan of AA. The framework to me is a little, male centric and old. And so I wanted something more modern and forward thinking and inclusive. So I just decided I was not going to be anonymous. And I knew I had a feeling that I wasn't alone in this. And it also closed a loophole. So I couldn't do what I did before, which
Right.
is talk myself back into drinking. So that's what it looked like. I worked from home. I ended up getting a coaching certification. I had this window, and it was a 6-month window where I knew if I really wanted to help other people quit drinking, but I wanted to get credentials behind it, that this was my time. And that's what I
Okay.
started to do once I got my feet underneath me. My kids were home at the time. They're all now young adults, but they were home and we were figuring out school. So, two kids full time at home, and then my husband as well. We had just gotten married, we got married in June of 2020. So, during this time, we were, living in Michigan, which was the state was locked down for a long time. Navigating a lot of close quarters and big life decisions.
It, that is, I didn't know how you were going to answer that, but you mentioned stress, and what you were doing, and that was one of the things that, and I can see that you have a new-ish title or part of your relationship, like you got official with the relationship. I don't know if you were cohabitating before, kids at home, lockdown, high-pressure job. That's a lot going on. You share that on the outside, your life looked powerful, but behind the scenes, alcohol had quietly become a coping tool. And so I wanted to sort of zoom way out and talk about the using alcohol as a coping mechanism and ask you if you remember how old you were, like sort of the first time you were introduced to alcohol as like anything, social.
My parents were like in the Pinochle Club, they
Okay.
had
What is that
you
a card game? Pinochle is a card game, right?
Yeah,
Okay,
it's a card game.
okay.
Yeah. So they would, they were social and they were social drinkers. We lived on a lake when I was growing up, so in Michigan we have these garage fridges. And so
Yep.
my mom drank Bartles and James, but my parents weren't like, I didn't know it at the time, but they didn't have an issue with alcohol. I would have never labeled it. They were never out of control. I never saw them drunk. They were just, social drinkers. So I would, to me, alcohol was just a thing you did to socialize. The first time I really remember like being interested in drinking alcohol. I was a junior or senior in high school, and I really wanted. So here is this is actually it's funny story. I've told this story sometimes, but a lot of my friends smoked, and so what I really wanted to do was smoke too. Even though I've always been a rebel, I was like, well, wait, I don't understand the pull to this, but I try. So what I did was we went to Burger King and we got Whopper Juniors, apparently. I don't know. Anyways, so we come back to my friend's house. I'm like, well, let me have a sip of the Zima. So I took a sip of Zima and then I took a drag off a Marlboro Red
This
because
is
that's
like the most 1990s conversation. You've got Bartles and James, Marlboro Red, and Zima
and a Whopper.
as a Whopper Junior, as the Beastie Boys play on the
100%.
boombox.
In the basement in Vicksburg, Michigan, and I immediately got dizzy and threw up.
All right, so that's it. I think that is in North America, that's going to be a pretty common kind of introduction. The social scene, right? The social scene is how we do it. Other people are trying it. It's omnipresent in the culture of growing up in the United States. And even though the research is really interesting right now, and this is not official research, and nobody should trust any information that I would give on this, but there's two competing bits of data. Like, there's a lot of research that looks like people are reducing the amount that they are drinking. Simultaneously, those sales of alcohol may or may not actually be going down. So it's like maybe some of the people are drinking more, maybe others are not. Is it like, nobody knows. But anyway, it's something I think that what's nice now in 2025 is that people are talking about it more, and they can talk about the things like you mentioned. AA is probably the most famous 12-step program, and I am not an expert in these things either, but you mentioned you thought it was very male-centered, which that's also a very modern conversation. And you're the first person that I've seen say that, but that makes sense because I think that the original person that wrote the book was probably a guy.
Was, yeah.
And they call them, like, isn't one of the names friends? His name Bill? Is it Bill?
Bill,
Bill.
yeah, both of
Friends
them are
of
Bill.
Bill, right? And that does sound like a club of boys, even if you were not meaning it to be that way. And one of the things we do see now is collections of groups designed for women
Yes.
who are sober curious or are looking to have this conversation. And I love that word, sober curious. Like, what does it even mean? Because I think in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s, it was a black and white conversation. And it was like either you are virtuous and you can handle it, or there's something wrong with you and you cannot, And that's not a friendly conversation for anybody.
No, not at all. And that was a big part. I'm like, if I'm gonna do this, I am just gonna lift the kimono. And if you know what, if I lose my job or whatever, and I checked with my husband, I'm like, Josh, are you okay with this? Because I want to go public. And he was like, yeah. Because I'm like, he goes, do you really want to work somewhere that doesn't support you not drinking? I go, no. And now in hindsight, it's so ridiculous. But I mean, those fears were real at the time. So yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that so let's talk a little bit more about your job so that people know what we're talking about here. So you have a very cool job, I think, as someone who just met you today. But tell us a little bit more about your job and why that would be possibly, like sort of forefront in your mind because you have a public profile.
I do. Very, yeah, my job is very public facing. So I am the general manager of a men's AA professional hockey team called the Kalamazoo Wings. This hockey franchise is 52 years old. We're the fourth oldest minor league hockey franchise. And I'll explain the levels of hockey here in a minute, but
Yes,
this
because I do
includes,
not know those.
yeah, yeah, I'll tell you in a minute. But this includes the American Hockey League and the East Coast Hockey League, which is the league the K-Wings play in. So this fourth oldest, this is a really big deal. Communities the size of Kalamazoo do not have professional sports teams. Just so your audience has an idea of Kalamazoo, our population is 75,000 proper. So if you go Southwest Michigan, you're about a quarter of a million, but most professional sports teams are in cities that have a million plus. Okay. So, but we're very unique in that sense. Oh, and I'm the first ever female GM accident. And I applied for a different zoo and they said, well, we got something else for you. And they brought me the K-Wings. And I said, the hockey team? And they said, yeah. And I go, it's still around. And they said, yeah. And I said, "You realize I don't know anything about hockey, right?" And they said, "We don't want a GM that knows about hockey. We want someone that knows how to build a team culture, so a front office staff or staff culture, knows how to sell and loves Kalamazoo. You don't need to know about hockey." So I took a 35% pay cut and crossed my fingers and said yes. And it's the best job I never knew I wanted.
I love that. I love that. So I'm going to make, all right. So the shift when you made this, you said that you did not hit a particular rock bottom moment. And that rock bottom is like one of those phrases that comes up in the conversation about substance. But what, tell us more though, if you can lean in a little bit to what were the things, if there were any, that were undesirable or, what impact was having that was really leaning you into, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah, so first off, the physical piece, like I was experiencing more blackouts. I was embarrassing myself. You get to a point if you drink too much. I mean, you go past more than two drinks and your prefrontal cortex is offline. If you keep drinking, you have a hard time regulating your emotions. And so I would end up crying over, like, I don't even know, like just embarrassing things. I would wake up in the morning and the first question I would ask myself as I'm waking up is, did I drink? Is anyone mad at me? Do I have my cell phone? And really professionally, I had this belief that in order to be respected in this industry, I needed to belly up to the bar with the boys. And that did not align with my core values. And so I'm like, what am I doing? Like, what am I doing? So I would say, did I have a rock bottom? I mean, no, I didn't. The rock bottom, my definition of rock bottom is being 6 feet under. So, and I think the whole thing's a fallacy, like rock bottom, because my definition's different than maybe someone else's. Someone else's rock bottom might be throwing up. So I just didn't it that voice when I talked earlier about a whisper, it got louder and louder. And I was just like, I have all these wonderful things in my life. Why can I not get my arms wrapped around this one thing?
All right, so we're going to come back and talk about that in a second, but I want to ask you a little bit more about the sports culture, because that's a in 2025, I think there's a pretty big unanimous consensus that alcohol is not on the list of health foods. But it is deeply, deeply ingrained in a lot of social culture and specifically in sports. And I would actually say very deeply in Midwestern sports, like as a culture, pizza, wings, beer, sports, lake culture, which you mentioned you live on a lake, boating and beer. And you're in a leadership position in a sports organization. And then you decided to go public. You mentioned that you had some concerns about how it would be received. As you were navigating this change within your community, within Michigan and the sports organization, the Wings, did you experience support from the people that were around you, friends and coworkers and leadership, or were there situations sometimes where you felt like you were carving a path that was against the grain of the existing culture?
Yeah. So the short answer is, did I feel supported? Yes, by most. And did I feel like I was carving a path? Yes. Like I don't think it's not an either or. It was a yes and, like, yes and yes. Most people aren't going to look at you and say, God, I'm so glad you quit drinking because you were a shit show. Most people aren't going to do that, right? They're not going to say to your face. And so everyone was supportive. You usually see it when the unconscious kind of comes out and they'll say things that they don't realize might be offensive or might prick at someone that has an issue with alcohol or feels like they do. And over it, it this whole living sober, it was not a light switch. It wasn't like October 12th, I was like, I am, woman, sober woman in sports, hear me roar. I mean, I had to work, do a lot of work on myself to get more and more comfortable expressing this desire to live alcohol-free and not be judged for it and chip away at this stigma and still be respected as a leader. Because whoever said that you had to drink to be a great leader, you know? And it's just all these beliefs that are programmed into us, and not in a culty way, but just culturally.
Yeah, there are a lot of people researching it because it's one of those things that we don't realize that we're being conditioned to sort of believe that you have to keep up with your boss, or you never say no to your boss who offers you a drink, or any of those things. Okay, so how much talking about making this change? It's October, you're thinking about it. You had done it before with AA. Let's talk a little bit about the research, if there was any. Or support programs. You mentioned that you found a coaching program. I don't know if that was right off the bat or after you were already in it a little bit, but what did you do at the time for like researching programs and support for your own sobriety journey at the beginning?
First off, I sat at my island and cried, ugly cried a lot to my husband. And I
Okay.
was, and you know, and I point that out because a lot of times people in the sober, curious space, they carry so much shame, they don't even tell the person closest to them.
Yeah.
Now, Josh knew our, and I won't go into our story unless there's interest about like how I opened up to him about my issues with alcohol because we were dating and there were the timeline was interesting. I thought when I went through my divorce, my second divorce, by the way, because it's my third time's a charm hubby, that all my relationship issues with alcohol would melt away. Naive little Tony.
So before you go on, I'd say, so what I'm hearing you say there to understand is that you were sort of you were pushing some one issue onto another. It's you were like, these are the issues with my relationship. My relationship is like if I get a good relationship, I won't have a problem with alcohol. Okay. All
Yeah, and
right.
that
Sorry
is
to interrupt.
no, that's all right. And that is typical. We think we change a lot of people that have substance related issues will change geographically. They'll move or they'll change jobs or they'll change marriages. And you know what? Usually the alcohol doesn't move. It comes right with us. So what I did was I knew I didn't want to do AA. I just knew that because I already knew that. I
Right,
went
you had
through
done that, yeah.
I had done that. So I decided, I just said, I'm going to put myself in a 30-day Tony timeout. I just said 30 days, and I had the full intention of going back to drinking after 30 days. I just wanted to hit the reset button. 2 weeks in, and I did 2 weeks. I'm very stubborn. So being stubborn is not a bad thing because if I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. So 2 weeks in, I'm like, ah, this is hard. It's getting hard. So I just did a quick Google search and I was like, other methodologies to quit drinking besides AA. And this book came up, This Naked Mind by Annie Grace.
Yeah, probably one of the top books right now. Yeah, in this
So,
field. Yeah.
yeah, so I get the book, I get the live alcohol. There's two books. There's a live alcohol experiment book too. I read it. And I read This Naked Mind first, and she starts to challenge some of these cultural beliefs around alcohol. And she goes, what if instead of being an alcoholic, you're alcohol free? And
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, well, that feels way different. And so she had me there. And then after those 2 weeks, they happened to be hosting a live alcohol experiment for 30 days. So I joined that and I knew, I'm like, okay, well, that'll get me to 6 weeks. It's 2 weeks longer than I wanted to do, but I'll give up another 2 weeks of drinking to see this through with the intention of going back. And then after the end of those 6 weeks, I was like, one. So I found another program called Sober Sis. I did that for 21 days. And by then I was almost at the end of the year of 2020. And I thought, I think I'm done.
Okay.
And so that's how it started. But as I opened up into 2021 that year, it's not like it was easy. I mean, it was not easy, but I kept going and here we are. I'm still here. But now I could give a rip about alcohol. A ton of thought work. And then I launched a coaching business, did the certification, and all the other things that I've done.
So, I have talked to other people about The Naked Mind, and I'll bring up something that I think I remember from her book or an essay she wrote and see if it resonated. Because you mentioned earlier in the conversation that one of the things that was top of mind for you in this was your leadership role. And I think that Annie Grace was in corporate leadership and speaking when she chose to get sober. And she tells a story that I remember. It's been a long time since I read it, but like it's like she was. She was drinking before she spoke on stage, and she had to, and she was hiding it. And I remember reading that and being like, oh my gosh, that is a really, really brave thing to take public. And so when you were reading, was that one of the things that drew you into the connection with her story?
Yeah, it was the vulnerability. It was, and more than anything, it was the different way of thinking. And it was coming from a woman. And I, as working in a male-dominated industry and understanding the unique nature of that, I've started to look for more empowering women to be inspired by. And she and I are the exact same age, and I've gotten to know her really well over the years. I still coach in some of her programs because I believe in what she does. And without her work, I wouldn't be where I am today in terms of my relationship with alcohol. So, yeah, all of that spoke to me.
Yeah, and I think it is important, and we talked about it a little bit, but I'll use the vocabulary. This is like we're talking about, actual representation of a woman who's in a similar spot and who is willing to be vulnerable and then also share with you what worked for her so that you can take those tools. And then you have, it sounds like to me, in your way, replicated that in your own and that you help other people. Okay, so now I will say this. I'm going to make a guess about your personality. You've hinted to this, right? Simply based on the fact that you work for a sports team, you're in a competitive environment. I am going to say go out on a limb here and say that you were probably a pretty goal-oriented, task-driven individual.
Yeah, you nailed me.
And
Yes.
that, right? And that lines up with the way you did the research. You set yourself a 30-day goal. You described it as stubborn, but I wanted to reframe it as being you are a person who can give yourself a task list and then figure out what you need in order to make it happen. So it's like you were like, I'm going to go 30 days. When it was hard, you found support and resources and instruction.
Yep.
Yeah, and then you made it happen. I mean, that's a compliment. I may not have done a good job
No,
saying it, but
it
that's a
is.
compliment.
No, it's good. You did, and it pull. Whether we get to this or not, but I have six leadership pillars, and my first one is go to the experts. When I need help, I go to someone who's walked the path before me. Whether it's running a hockey team, didn't know how to do that either, or quitting drinking. So I find people who know and share similar core values of mine, because then I can buy in easier. I can believe. I can be challenged to think differently.
And you're an example of when it doesn't match one of your values or it's not aligned with something in your life, it's okay to look for something else. Like, this is my goal, but the way this other expert is pitching it doesn't match with the way I want to do it. I'm going to see if there's somebody else. And you're an example of that.
100%. And even if you want to swing over my personal life, I had to figure out the hard way in my marriages. I never thought I'd be someone married three times. I mean, talk about shame overload. And my parents were married. My mom died last year, but up until she passed, they were married just 2 months shy of 50 years. So so it was just like, if it didn't align with my core values, I had no problem peacing out. And that's a great thing. And it is all about reframing how we look at things, because I could have been ashamed of that, or I could say, no, I wanted to change it, and I did.
Were you pretty dialed into what your core values were when you started the self-examination, or did some of that come up as you did the work of peeling back the layers and making these changes and decisions?
Yeah, I didn't have language for it. So I would say it definitely came as I did this work, and it helped me understand why I felt so emotionally icky when I was that old version of me. My friends used to call me Tony Party Time, and I hated the name, but I would a outwardly laugh about it because, that's what you do. But so health and wellness is one of my core values. As we laughed earlier, it's not a health food. It's not, but so when I would feel not just emotionally icky, but or not just physically icky, but emotionally, like it just didn't, because health and wellness was a core value, or integrity. I mean, I was just not doing things that someone with high integrity would do if I was drinking, if I slipped into that persona of Tony Party Time. And so
Where
I.
do community and belonging fit in? Do you have values that align that sort of sound like that, like being in community and belonging?
Yeah,
Because
that was
those are the
kind
ones that I find get confusing as people unpeel it when we're doing things that relate to our social lives and our friend group. That can get complicated to do that sort of decoding individually, like where do I fit and where do I belong and who am I if these two values have, like you said, you have to rewrite it. And for everybody, that's going to be different.
It is. And that one, community's been tricky for me. But friendships have always been tricky for me. But it wasn't until I turned 40 that I could figure that one out. But it also, I always say this, all roads lead back to alcohol. At least for me, they did. My two best friends died at a very young age. There were three of us growing up together. They both, one got in a car accident when we were 16 and was in a coma, and she died of pneumonia at 29. And then our
Wow.
other best friend died in a routine surgery at 23. And I was the black sheep. They loved me because I was the one sneaking out, boy crazy. Like I was all these things, and they were more, rule followers. And so we balanced each other out. But I had a tremendous amount of guilt, and I just didn't get it. And so I coped, right? And so that's kind of community's been tough for me. I've had a very hard time building close relationships with women in particular. If they are in my backyard, so to speak, I have great relationships with my friends that live across the country or in Canada because we can communicate in a way that works for my style. So community is an interesting one for me. I'm pretty closed off. I try not to be, but part of that too is my public facing job and the scrutiny I get when the team isn't playing well. And I mean, that's a whole other thing being a woman in this role. I've been concerned about my safety many times.
And so you mentioned the word a couple of times, coping skills. And I will just throw this in as somebody, I'm not an expert, I'm not a doctor, any of those things. But one of the things that is in my observation and experience is that it's really easy to be really hard on ourselves for using coping skills that have stopped working, but we start using them because they do work. And so it's like giving yourself the credit for like you did at the beginning solve the problem. It was working, and then you needed a new solution, and you were brave enough to do this. Okay, share with us some of the changes and improvements in your life that have come about as making this change in your life.
Yeah, one of the things people fear the most is what am I going to do with this time now that I'm not drinking? So if you think about the amount of time, or at least in my case, thinking about drinking, actively drinking, and recovering from drinking. Now, I didn't log any of this, but on average, people give themselves back 800 hours a year when they for me, when they quit drinking. So I had 800 hours a year back, which is a gift. And I took those 800 hours and I started my own business. And so that's where I launched out of my coaching certification, what was called Mindfulness Elevated. It's all under Tony Will now, but lifestyle coaching business to help people reduce or remove substances. That was an insurance policy for me too. I had a feeling Tony Party Time would want to, resurface, and there were times where I put it did come up, and I would talk to my husband about it, or I had all these clients, so I had an insurance policy, and so I launched that business, which led to professional development coaching because I've changed my career a few times. So then that led to my podcast, which led to my conference, and now my book comes out in August. And so it's led there's it's been an interesting breadcrumb trail, but I've given myself get this gift of time that allowed me to do something I always wanted to do, which is own my own business.
That is fantastic. All right. So it leads us right there because I wanted to make sure that I knew about the podcast. I did not know about the book. And we've talked about the business. So a lot of this stuff is under your name, Tony Will, and you have a website, tonywill.com. The podcast is called Women in dot, dot, dot. And I'll put the link in the show notes and everywhere. Tell us a little bit about what the podcast is about.
So the podcast is, well, as you mentioned, women in dot, dot, dot. I have men and women on the podcast. It is all about lifting up the women we are, if you're a woman, or the women in our lives who helped us become the person we are today. And so I really talk to my guests about what their bio is, and like, because everyone's interesting in some way, shape, or form. And
I
then
think so.
Yeah. Oh, I love it. I love it. And so then I will ask them questions about, their world. And then I said, well, who are the women that have influenced you in the Amy that sits before me now?
Yeah.
And how do you lift women up? And so where it spawned from was I'm on the sports forum, or I'm on the national steering committee for the National Sports Forum. And they asked me to moderate the first time in 40 years, an all women panel on sports leadership in front of 1,000 people. The energy in that room was incredible. Then I hosted a women's networking event. I brought in an author. I did all these amazing things. And I was like, how do I keep these stories going? And so I was on a walk with my dog. I came back in the house. I typed the outline to this podcast. Do I know how to do a podcast? No. So I went to people that I knew could help me. And 30 days later, my first episode came out.
I love that. All right. And so the book comes out late in the summer. You have a conference in Kalamazoo called Empower Her. That's in March. And so for people who subscribe to the newsletter, you can find it. I'm sure that if they visit your website, there's information. But if you subscribe to the newsletter, the link to the podcast is there. We're going to put some information about the conference when it's closer, all that kind of stuff. It's everybody should join the website. All right. Tony, are you ready for to wrap this up with the final three fun questions?
Yeah, I'm excited. Bring them on.
All right, so usually I have a rule for myself where I don't make the questions about the topic of the interview, but I'm cheating with you for the first one because I like to ask my questions that are talking about sobriety and sober curiousness this question because it comes up a lot in the lifestyle choice and change that people are making. Today, as a sober person, if you go to a barbecue or a picnic or a tailgate, what are you likely to choose as a drink to hold in your hand?
It depends on the day. Water is often a choice that I enjoy. I try to drink 100 ounces a day. It's part of my wellness piece. Sometimes a Coke Zero if I'm feeling a little naughty, which is hilarious. And once in a blue moon, a Heineken Zero.
There you go. There you go. All right, I love it. That was a great answer. And that's inspired by the fact that I've run into people in my lifetime who are trying to do things and they're like, "Yeah, but if I go out with my friends, what am I going to drink?" Or when you're at the restaurant and they're like, "What would you like to drink?" and having the courage to just be like, "I would like a lemonade or a Sprite," or stop asking me that. You know, like, all right. So, you are you're a GM for a sports organization. You may have given, and you're a coach, and you may have given a few motivational speeches in your day. Do you have any coaches who you admire as a mentor in your own life, sports or otherwise?
I will tell you, and it's an honest answer. I think people be like, no, that's because we work together, but our head coach of our hockey team, Joel Martin, he inspires me. He's first off, he's a black man in a white sport, and he stopped drinking 3 months after me. And so you have two minorities together in Kalamazoo, Michigan, of all places, like really paving our own way. But I'm inspired by his willingness to do these hard things. And we didn't plan to do that together.
Yeah.
It just so happens that that's where, the good Lord put us. So he inspires me a lot, and he's a lot quieter than me. And so it's nice because we balance each other out, and there's a lot of respect. And his job is very hard in hockey. I mean, the players are moving up and down from the NHL, AHL to the ECHL. You're never playing with the same team game over game. It's a tough job.
I believe it. I do. All right, last one. If you are on a long flight, what is something you might choose for in-flight entertainment? Are you going to sleep? Are you going to read a book? Are you going to watch the in-flight airplane TV video entertainment music in your headphones or something else?
So I'm going to I don't watch what's on the screen. I download stuff on my phone, or always, or I'm connected to Wi-Fi. So I use something on Netflix usually, or some crappy reality TV, and then a nap, and then I will read.
All
So
three of those things.
all
There you
three
go.
of those
It's
things.
a, you know, I'm going to rework that. I've asked that question before, but I think I do need to rework it because the divide is some people will watch the back of the seat or on the phone, and other people are team never ever. I'm going to download it before I get on the plane. So those, I'm going to rework that question to figure that out when I talk to you. That's it, Tony. Well, thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi, again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.